Welcome to Mayo Clinic Educator Central, brought to you by the Learning Solutions Center at Mayo Clinic. I'm Stacey Kraft. Today we'll be talking about connecting with learners through learner-centered approaches. Now, I think this is a very special episode that I hope will resonate with all of our listeners in both their roles as educators and as lifelong learners. Now, I am elated that our guest today, Dr. Cheryl Albald, agreed to stop by the show and share her perspective on this topic. A little background on Dr. Albald. Dr. Albald is an assistant professor of medical education in the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. She currently serves as the administrator and designated institutional administrator for the Mayo Clinic School of Graduate Medical Education, one of Mayo Clinic's 5 accredited schools and among the nation's largest sponsoring institutions of graduate medical education programs. Dr. Albald has over 25 years of experience in higher education, student affairs, graduate studies, and medical education as both an administrator and a faculty member. Dr. Albald currently serves as a member of the steering committee of the Association of American Medical Colleges Group on Resident Affairs and was recently elected to the combined board of trustees for the Educational Commission for Foreign Medical Graduates and Foundation for Advancement of International Medical Education Research. Dr. Albald earned a Doctor of Philosophy degree in Educational Studies with a concentration in higher education and a minor certificate in education research, measurement, and evaluation, both from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and a master's degree in education and counseling and student personal services from Fordham University, New York. She has given numerous national and international presentations. Dr. Albald's primary research interests focus on topics impacting higher education learners. She is a featured chapter author in the book DIVA Diaries, The Road to the PhD and Stories of Black Women Who Have Endured. So without further ado, welcome Dr. Albald.
Thank you.
So today we're going to kind of be talking about the concept of connecting with our learners. And I know that you have a special interest in this, Dr. Albald. I've heard you talk before a bit about teacher-centered and learner-centered. And I was wondering if you could maybe define or just kind of let us know what that means to you.
Sure. So yes, you're right. I do have an interest both from my work and research and just even personal work to this topic of connecting with learners, and it's one that's important to me. First, I think it's important to talk about what we mean by connecting and connection, because that could have so many meanings. For me, I like the definition that's used by John Maxwell, famous author, coach, leadership development, where he talks about that connecting is really the ability to be able to identify with people and to relate to them in a way that's able to increase your influence with them. So I think that, you know, teaching and learning is an ultimate form of influence, right, between individuals. And so to begin with this concept of teacher-centered versus learner-centered, which is, again, something that I've talked about before, I really think of both as sort of a spectrum, and they're both methodologies, right, of teaching and learning. What they represent is more of a paradigm shift in education today, in approaching learning, that's really more based on needs and styles of contemporary learners. So if we take these individually, we can talk about teacher-centered first. What does that mean? Well, typically, that's when we come from the perspective that the teacher is the authority in the classroom. Right. So this is typically seen more in approaches that utilize more of a lecture style. So the teacher is talking to the students and the student's role is more passive. That role is to listen and to learn through listening to the teacher. The goal here in the educational setting or environment is for the teacher to transfer or impart their knowledge, right? The teacher mm-hmm. is, and their knowledge is seen as the most valued source right. in the learning exchange.
So like that sage on the stage sort of phenomenon.
Right. So that's what that's more commonly referred to as sage on the stage. Mm-hmm. In contrast, if we come from a learner-centered perspective, that's where, as the teacher or the faculty member, we really feel more of a personal responsibility to have ownership for an active learning environment. So in a learner-centered environment, the learners are actually encouraged to interact, to even some cases challenge the teacher's knowledge perspective. But most of all, they're really encouraged to co-create and construct meaning around the material along with the teacher, right? The teacher is not the only authority, not the only source of expertise. What learners bring from their own experiences potentially can help in this sort of co-construction of meaning around the material. And learners are really encouraged in a more of an independent problem-solving approach around the material so that their learning is active and not, you know, just passive, not just listening and receiving, but contributing and even critical analysis.
Right. So in this sense, the teacher is the guide who's providing them with content.
Guide on the side. Right. So we go from sage on the stage mm-hmm. to guide on the side are some particular ways that people kind of reference these two approaches.
Oh, I love that. So easy to remember too, that sort of shift with those two phrases, sage on the stage to guide on the side. So I love that a lot.
And for me, I think that a key concept in the framework of learner-centered approach is that you're valuing and therefore being very intentional about connecting with the learner.
Right. So, and that kind of brings me to my next point I wanted to get your thoughts on. If we're talking about moving from teacher-centered to learner-centered and connecting with the learner, why does that matter? Where is the value in connecting with the learner? I know that, you know, some people might say, I learned this way. Someone stood at the front, taught me everything. I took notes and I'm just fine. So I didn't need somebody to connect with me.
Yeah, I think that's an important question to ask, because I think that perhaps yourself and others who may be listening to this podcast would say that, right? I know that for me, reflecting back on my educational journey, that's probably mostly the format which I was taught in, and I consider myself to have learned, yes, and to have success as a result of that learning. So yeah, why is that important? Well, I think that, like I said, when you look at teaching and learning as sort of this ultimate form of influence, the influence that Maxwell talks about in his definition of connection, again, being that it's a way that you can identify with people and relate to them in a way such that you can increase your influence over them or with them. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, then you realize and have to recognize that learning is really, it's a sociocultural and emotional and individual experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so to really be able to influence an individual, you need to have that connection. We know that human beings thrive on personal relationships, and that to build a personal relationship as a part of doing that is building a rapport with an individual, right? Another way and form of connection, or rapport sometimes is at the very essence, I think, of connection. So we know that this is important to do, because our whole point in teaching something is that we want to be able to facilitate growth and development around that particular topic or material or content. And for true performance, so much more of education today is, you know, based on actual learning outcomes and having, you know, we talk about outcomes-based education and how important it is to have learning outcomes that we're designing our education around. So when faculty member or teacher or instructor is able to connect with a learner on a personal level, then I think that that has then the opportunity for greater influence on their performance around the material, as well as the outcomes, their learning outcomes.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking, just because, you know, teacher-centered learning or teaching can be effective for some people, yes, doesn't mean that it's the best way to teach, right, and that, you know, learner-centered or, you know, connecting with the learner is shown to have those better learning outcomes, deeper, right, more long-term learning. So, yeah, right, you can learn from a video or a lecture, but you can learn better probably from these other strategies. And I wanted to ask you, when you were talking, when I think about, you know, a learner-centered or connecting with the learner, there is the learning outcomes of the actual objectives or outcomes that you want to teach. But do you think this also contributes to sort of a growth mindset in learners and helping them become lifelong learners when it's learner-centered?
I do. I think I would support that. I mean, again, you know, remember I said for me, it's sort of a spectrum, right? And so, mm-hmm, it's not a dichotomy necessarily of wrong or right. You know, teacher-centered is wrong versus learner-centered. I don't like to think of it that way, because just as the example that you said, I think that context is important, learning, mm-hmm, environment is important, what you're trying to teach, you know, the actual material is important. All of these things have to be factors in any type of approach or methodology that you're going to use in the learning environment or in the classroom setting. So, so that's why I said, like, I consider it, you know, to be sort of like a spectrum. And, you know, like everything else, there's probably something in the middle, right, that incorporates both, or again, is specific to the situation. So I do think that that was a, so thanks for making that point. I think that that's an important point.
That kind of makes me think also, we're talking about connecting to the students. Mm-hmm. I wonder what your thoughts might be on where students are at and their expectations, because as new groups of young people move into, you know, the workforce and into higher education, their experiences, I believe, might not be the same as maybe ours, where we were kind of had that very teacher-centered lecture sort of experience. And how does that maybe impact their mindsets and expectations?
Right. So there's a lot that individuals can go out and read about sort of our, you know, current generations of learners, you know, that are in the classroom and in the learning environment. There's a lot of out there on millennial, mm-hmm, learning, and like I said, just the various generations. But I think in general, what we're finding is that contemporary learners really have an expectation that they're going to be able to learn in a, you know, through a variety of modalities. That there is not this one size fits all, that curriculum, like I said, is being intentionally designed such that it's sort of meeting them where they're at and in their, some of their preferred formats for learning. Mm-hmm. I have in the past given talks on different sort of learning pedagogy. And I've talked about how we have to see this movement, you know, the big sort of pedagogical perspective was andragogy, which had to do with adult learning style, mm-hmm, and what are the best ways to teach adult learners. And I talk about how it's actually moved to something now that's referred to as eudagogy, which is this idea, whereas andragogy is this self-directedness is important, mm-hmm, in adult learners, important
and autonomy,
for them that they, yeah, right, and autonomy and all these things and relevance and all these things. In eudagogy, it adds the component of self-determinedness, so that not only can they be, do they need to be self-directed and have autonomy in their learning, they need to be able to also determine how and when they learn. And that's where we see technology playing such an important role. people. And so we know that, technology is very important to contemporary learners. They want that access to learning on demand, at their own pace and time, and the ability to determine the direction of their learning. So I think that that is increasingly, if not already, being an expectation and definitely a mindset of learners. This is why we see things like, the blended learning, inverted classrooms. We see these types of things coming into the lexicon of how we deliver learning and how we engage learners today. I think that the learners definitely want more flexibility with being able to demonstrate mastery. So the traditional way that we've approached assessments, for example, I think that the expectations and current mindsets of learners is that we have varied ways that they can demonstrate mastery of the content. So not just the traditional paper test, but something that's really important in medical education is things like, simulation and the ability to demonstrate learning through things like, we have observed, being able to observe how mastery of something. So we observe medical students in patient interactions, through OSCEs and various things like that. I think overall, learners are also expecting and having the thought that the learning environment should not be limited to the classroom and should not necessarily be so structured. So they want the flexibility to have in-class opportunities, perhaps, but also online opportunities or e-learning opportunities. And what's important, too, is this ability to have visualization of content. So when we go back to our discussion about teacher-centered, some of what's more problematic with only that perspective is there's less ability then for the learner to be able to visualize the content and to actually like live with the content. So, when we do things like incorporate simulation or 3D imagery, or again, bringing it back to medical education, when we have digital anatomy tables that show visually how we're trying to explain either systems or how disease works, these things resonate more, I think, with contemporary learners and are almost becoming, an expectation that they're bringing to how they're going to learn. So again, this variety of modalities, this integrated nature of learning, how does it relate to other things? What's the relevance and timeliness of the content? The flexibility in being able to demonstrate mastery as well as to interface with the material in a self-determined way in their own time, at their own speed, and then authentic assessments that are valid for assessing their real learning in real time. All these, I think, are current learner expectations and mindsets.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of how younger generations and the newer generations, how they interact with media and their, and this kind of, I think, connects to what you're saying about needing to kind of live with the content. Yes. And that being that they like to have access to it, to remix it, to manipulate it, to make it their own. So there is now an assumption that you will have the ability as a learner to kind of almost own the content and do what you'd like with it. Whereas I think, in the past we have just like textbooks and a presentation that existed and, it happened and it was ephemeral and your notes were the kind of thing you took away from it, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Because again, remember when I talked about, sort of the definition or some of the key tenets of learner-centered is that the learner is able to co-create and construct meaning around the material. So the access to that material is important, like you're saying, and for them to be able to take that and, like we said, manipulate that so that they can create real meaning for themselves, around this material, and that they may even advance to problem solving based on how they're able to interpret and create meaning around what they're learning.
I found this neat infographic that kind of had a bunch of ideas for what instructional methods are, you know, mm-hmm. learner-centered. If people are wondering, well, what does this even mean? What does learner-centered mm-hmm. mean? What does it look like? You mentioned some of them already with, you know, some of the demonstrations and all that. I wanted to just list a few, and then if you had sure. any idea that you think are really common, just to give people an idea. This graphic, which I'll put in the podcast notes, it talks about presentations, you know, again, like we said, creating media, small group work would be an mm-hmm. example. When you were talking about different ways to show mastery, I was thinking of case studies in group yep. works, and that's also on here. You know, role playing, simulation, demonstrations, inquiry-based activities, mm-hmm. which is something interesting. I don't know if there are any others that you wanted to list, or maybe I hit them all with this.
I mean, those are definitely pretty good. I know that in my own teaching, I utilize all of those in the course of, you know, a single course. Mm-hmm. So over the several weeks, the 16 weeks or so typically of a course, I always want an opportunity for the students to demonstrate their learning. Presentations are a good way to do that. I want them to co-create meaning and to have peer inquiry. Small groups are a good way to do that. You know, case studies are great for analysis, critical reflection, you know, which are all sort of good activities for mm-hmm. learners to engage in. Role playing, not so much. I've not done that one as much. I think certain situations could lend themselves well to that. For sure. Simulation, I mentioned, which is just increasingly so important, particularly in medical education. We recognized long ago, and there's even a famous Mayo legacy quote about, you know, no reason to be practicing mm-hmm. on the patient. And so simulation is really important, particularly in medical education. But yes, I think that infographic, I'll be interested to see it myself, and we'll probably steal it because yeah. it sounds like it does capture much of these concepts.
Yeah, it has some great stuff in it. You know, it even talks about games and use of social media and all that. And I know that could take us down a whole bunch of other rabbit hole.
But I think that the message is engaging learners. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're learner-centered, we want to really think of how and what is the best way that we can engage our learners in this process, again, so that it's not a passive situation, it's active on both parts. So I think that's the takeaway, I think.
What are some of the barriers that educators might face to connecting to learners or shifting the perspective? Because we still don't see that.
Right. I think it's because people may not have some good sort of foundational constructs from which to engage in doing this. For me, from my educational background, I was really able to have some very guiding types of theoretical perspectives that were helpful for me in designing how I was going to and what efforts and what I was going to do to try to connect with my learners in the instructional setting or in the classroom setting in particular. I can share some of those, and I'll share them in brief and very high level, of course, and would encourage individuals for whom one or more of them resonate with you to then go and do, of course, further reading of the actual theories and some of the studies that have utilized the theories as a framework, and that would be a good way to learn more about them. But so first is this, it's really more of a concept than a theory, which is this idea of the warm demander. And this was coined, a phrase that was coined by a researcher, Kleinfeld. And warm demander is, a warm demander is a type of teacher who is able to effectively connect with learners by communicating personal warmth and interest, but also actively demanding high expectations from them. And they utilize this balance of the warmth and interest and support with actively demanding performance and expectation, providing high expectation for the learner. Mm-hmm. And so overall, that really resonated with me. I think it resonated with me because I feel like it was almost kind of the style that my parents used with me just in life. And so that warm demander concept was very familiar for me. And when I further, as I was going through my educational journey and further, it came across some other theories that I could then situate that warm demander concept within those theoretical perspectives, it was even more helpful. So the first of these is a theory by Nevitt Sanford, who's a psychologist, and he talks about challenge and support. That with learners, it's important for us to have this balance of challenge and support, that optimal student growth and development is a result of both challenges, but even more importantly, supporting learners to successfully meet the challenges. And so when you're connecting with learners, it means you understand how to support them through their learning process. So as a warm demander, again, you're able to establish the supports that are going to be effective and individualized to that learner. The second is a theory called unconditional positive regard, or Rogerian theory, unconditional positive regard. Carl Rogers, who was a humanistic psychologist, came up with this. And I learned about this approach during my master's program, because my master's is in counseling. And it has been one of the most fundamental theoretical perspectives for me. So unconditional positive regard is describing an acceptance and support of an individual. Now, in the context that Carl Rogers was offering this, it was in the counseling setting between the counselor and patient, but it really is applicable to teacher and student, and to other, you know, key relationships. So that acceptance, and again, we hear the word support, but now we've added acceptance of an individual. So it's almost this attitude of valuing, of suspending judgment, when, especially when we first meet people. So suspending judgment about what we think different learners are capable of. And mm-hmm. the idea is that we, through our relationship with them, we're listening to them, we're connecting with them without judging them and without wanting to change them, which I think is the key. So many times, right, we want to change people, and there's a difference between, and I had to learn this too, being influencing people in terms of their behavior or what they're able to achieve versus trying to change them. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other topic to talk about. But the key to unconditional positive regard is that, you know, it's that unconditional acceptance, right? And listening and connecting without the goal of changing them. And bringing this back to the warm demander concept, warm demanders believe in an individual's capacity to succeed on their own, that they have it within them and you're going to nurture that instead of imparting it, again, using impart from the teacher-centered, that was a word that we threw out there, that you're more nurturing that knowledge and learning process.
Yeah, and this reminds me so much of what is called care theory, or the ethics of care, and Nell Nodding's work.
Yes. Absolutely. And then the final one is something that folks who know me know that I talk about a lot, are these two constructs of mattering and belonging. So first with mattering, which Rosenberg and McCullough talk about, they talk about mattering as being external validation, but at the interpersonal level, by others that are key people in our lives. And so, of course, again, and for what we're talking about today, this could include, you know, professors, could include fellow students. And it really is, like you just said, people, the connection is made because people believe that you care about them and more importantly, that you appreciate them. Mm-hmm. So this is very key. And again, as a warm demander, you're establishing a caring relationship that convinces the students that you believe in them and that you truly do care about their interests. And the accompanying construct of belonging or even sense of belonging is also important. And individuals have a sense of identification in relation to a ship to a group. So we need to feel that, you know, we belong here. I belong in this classroom. And we know, you know, things that can happen. Again, we could go on tangents on this, like stereotype threat and other things that happen if individuals don't believe or have this sense of belonging, because we know that it can have both cognitive and affective type responses in the individual.
Right.
And what's interesting is belonging is really a consequence of mattering. If you convey mattering well, as a consequence, people will feel that they belong and that they're capable and that they're, you know, they have agency. It's really, so again, belonging comes as a consequence of mattering, right? Yeah. And connecting with students is something that you have to do to engender both that mattering and that belonging. And it's all a part of it, right?
Right.
And, you know, the whole value of connecting with students and this idea of as a warm demander, it really does create this opportunity, going back to when you asked why is this important, it really does create this opportunity to greatly improve the relationship between faculty and students. Again, the students' peer relationships in the learning environment or in the classroom, the interactions that happen in the classroom, and overall this goal of improving learning.
Yeah, and I would say even their relationship with the whole concept of learning in general.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we know that self-concept and academic self-concept is another favorite topic of mine, and something that I wrote about in my doctoral program a lot. And academic self-concept is tied into some of these key foundational theoretical perspectives. But I think those are important. So I think that's, you know, kind of an important way to conceptualize this and frame this. And like I said, if you kind of read more about and learn more about those, then it starts to sort of come together for you, especially around this connection being this role of warm demander. But a little kind of going back, the question that you did ask was, you know, barriers to connecting with learners. I think that the barriers can be are simple things that are barriers to a lot of things that have at their foundation communication, including, you know, poor communication. Time, I think, can be a barrier. It does take time, especially to connect one-on-one with people, and you don't necessarily always have enough time sometimes to be able to build that in a way. In order sometimes to do that, you have to build trust over time to have that effective connection. And so again, you know, time, like I was saying, can be a barrier. The learning environment is a distracting place. So there's a lot going on.
Well, Dr. Albold, I was wondering if you had any tips for educators who maybe are starting at a very teacher-centered space and are wanting to just start to connect with the learner.
So yeah, there are some things that I would say that one could think about and be intentional about doing. So I think as a tip, you really do have to build a relationship very deliberately and intentionally. Ways to do this may be to make contact before the course even begins. Imagine reaching out to your students and to your learners and getting to know who they are, you know, having them introduce themselves to you in some brief way so that before you even move into the group learning setting, you've established a connection individually. I think that you can build community in class, certainly, by encouraging learners to share their ideas and encouraging them to share in a peer-to-peer way. I love this idea that classrooms are communities of practice, and therefore we all have a passion around the content and the material, and we can all contribute, again, that co-creation and constructing meaning around the material. So, for example, I always open my class with, you know, asking if there's anything that people want to share. Do they want to share a way that since the last time that we met, they were able to use the material or apply the content or apply learning? Did they observe something that is related, you know, or is there something that just would be important as a community of practice around this material that others should know? And it's not easy at first, you know, it's kind of quiet. People don't necessarily jump right in. But over the course of a couple weeks, you start to see people kind of get it. And especially that they see that it's invited and it becomes safer as, you know, as a group, they get to know each other. I think that another tip is, and it's kind of related to the first about sort of making contact, having them introduce themselves, you know, but really like learning about them, you know, understanding and asking maybe something about their learning style or preferences or how best do they learn, I think is a way to do this. And I think learners appreciate that. And again, that information is going to help inform how you go about the course, what adjustments you make, and then particularly can inform as you look at what you're planning to do, as we talked about before, for assessment and having varied assessments. I think something that people don't think about but is important to do is you need to have understanding of yourself as an educator. You need to understand your own sort of beliefs and biases that you may unintentionally bring into the learning environment. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you can monitor your reactions to learners when you are trying to connect with them and things come up. And again, remember that unconditional positive regard and how that's a goal, you know, that you want to move towards. Because I think that, you know, sometimes we can have these assumptions and they can be more kind of implicit rather than explicit, but they still overall communicate a lack of caring if we're not aware of them. And so our whole thing is to establish this relationship of caring about the learner and that connection with the learner. So you don't want to undermine that unknowingly. And to guard against that, you really want to take some time to sort of understand your, like I said, your own self, your own beliefs, and perhaps, you know, maybe some implicit biases that you might have, so that you can monitor that to not bring them both into the learning environment and definitely into your interface, and not have them undermine your ability to establish that connection with learners. And then the final thing I'd say is that I like a framework, and it's a medical educator framework. Have you ever heard of like the ostrich, peacock, and the beaver metaphors?
I have not.
Oh, I love this. I love these. So this is Ronald Hardin's work, who's a medical educator, and he's writes about outcome-based education. And he talks about teachers or instructors coming from, like, he uses three metaphors to describe sort of like a typology or patterns of behaviors in educators. So you have the ostrich, who he says ignores, you know, sort of current pedagogy, believes that things like talking about pedagogy is just a passing fad and that it's irrelevant for what you have to teach. So they're just basically ignoring, you know, kind of the current literature and current theories. And then you have the peacocks who, they're too ostentatious, right? A peacock is very ostentatious. So they display these great learning outcomes, but they haven't really committed to it in the sense of designing their curriculum and their teaching to be based on this and to actually achieve this, right? Mm-hmm. So they're only sort of paying face value attention to this. And then beavers are the ones who are conscientiously preparing for the learning environment, conscientiously designing and building curriculum around the learning outcomes and that they have for their learners, and that, you know, and that they have for themselves in the learning environment. So when I think about it, my last tip would be, of course, right, be a beaver. You want to make learning compelling. You know, learners want to know why this is important for them to learn. So you need to convey that and help them to understand that by being intentional about how you're going to make that learning compelling. All the things that we talked about, using a variety of modalities, understanding their learning style, this whole discussion of making a connection with them. And so I think you want to be that beaver, make learning compelling by intentional design. You want to be very transparent about what your goals are and your expectations for their learning. This is, again, building that rapport with them to build that trusting relationship. And I just think just being a beaver, if you can just kind of remember that, and building that strong foundation in your classroom would be a helpful way to approach it.
I love that. I love that example, that analogy. I've never heard it before, but it's fantastic. So really what you're talking about is a very kind of deep culture shift in a way between from one side to the other, like, well, paradigm shift, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is marvelous. One thing I was thinking for people who maybe, you know, maybe if you're somebody who's just doing lectures and you don't know how to dip your toe in the pool of doing something that's a little more learner-centered, maybe you still can give lectures, of course, but maybe you start to integrate a few other activities that are more collaborative, like a group activity or a case study or, you know, some kind of group presentation or something, some kind of activity that helps you interact with the learner in a way that is co-constructing that knowledge.
No, I would absolutely agree with that. I think that none of this is, you know, sort of an overnight phenomena. I think that there's a sort of try and then fail forward if something doesn't work as you planned or predicted. What do you learn from it to tweak and do differently? And then, you know, learning environments are situational. So again, what might work in one situation may not necessarily work in another situation. Right. If you even from groups of learners to, you know, other groups of learners, there are things sometimes that I've done in my courses in the past, and when I go to do them with this particular group, it just doesn't work. Maybe the experience of this group is different. Again, going back to adult learners bring their own experience, you know, lived experience and personal narratives into the learning environment. So maybe the experience is, you know, advanced or less advanced than another group that I work with. So yeah, I think I think what you've said makes good sense in taking small steps, trying small things, looking at your curriculum, looking at it through the lens of teacher-centered versus learner-centered, and how can you move it iteratively, you know, maybe if it's teacher-centered towards being more learner-centered with not necessarily throwing out everything that you plan to do, but what can you incorporate here or there? What can you try here or there that might incorporate some of the things that we've talked about today that will allow you to connect more with, you know, with your learners.
Right.
And again, with that goal of being able to influence their growth and development around the material.
I even think there are some, even for lack of a better word, mechanical things that you can even do to achieve some of the smaller pieces that you were talking about. So as far as like sharing expectations with and being transparent, that could be as simple as, you could start with just aligning everything that's happening to a learning objective and let everybody know that we're doing this particular activity because of this number 4 learning objective, or
yes,
that's why we're reading this book, or that's why we're having this discussion. So just simple mechanical things, like, I don't know if that's mechanical, but I couldn't really think of a better word for it. Yeah. Help.
Well, I agree. Absolutely. You could even do that simply in your syllabus, if you provide a syllabus, if that's appropriate. I do that in my syllabus. as the assignments go through the course, I indicate which learning objectives they're meeting. So even just in looking at a syllabus, learners or students can see how it's connected and why they're learning that.
So this touches every part of an educational curriculum or asset or endeavor, really, this perspective.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to say?
One of my favorite is a quote by actually the founder of he's labeled as the founder of the modern Turkish Republic. But I love that he said, "A good teacher is like a candle. It consumes itself to light the way for others."
Wow. So. Great. That's really nice.
That's a keeper. That one's a keeper.
Yeah, it is really good. Well, thank you so much for your time. I want to thank you so much for your time, Dr. Alval. This was a fantastic conversation.
It's been really fun. Thank you.
If you have any ideas for topics, would like to be a guest, or want to reach out to us, send us an email at edufi@mayo.edu.